Live
from welcome to New York. This is
the Just End the Suffering podcast.
For the win.
Got it!
Oh! He broke his ankle!
Follow me to freedom!
Y'all ready for this?
Here's your host, Mike Phillips.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Just End the Suffering podcast for New York Sports Talk, along Suffering Fan, your host, Mike Phillips. We have our Super Bowl matchup all set here. Championship Sunday delivered us a Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl. I'm going to be joined in just a bit by Russell Baxter to recap all the action we saw on Sunday and start getting us ready for the big game. We're going to do a two-week special here on the podcast. Do the game preview today. We'll do the betting next week. So no showing the money this week, just the football preview. That's coming up Russell in just a bit. Make sure you lock the end of the show for these two-minute druggy. What to take away from the Australian Open. The first major of the tennis season wrapped up. I will share my thoughts at the end of the podcast. Like you hear on the Just in the Suffering podcast, feel free to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon, all the usual suspects. Simply search for Just End the Suffering, your favorite podcast platforms. Find all our episodes there. If you have your feedback and starring as well, then with the podcast, Ian Bauer going forward. If you like what you hear, leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Let us know how we're doing here. Check out the YouTube page, Mike Phillips on YouTube. Video version of the conversation with Russell Baxter is up on YouTube. Again, Mike Phillips on YouTube. Now, any further ado, let's get to our opening tip. I'll give you my general thoughts on what we saw in the two games on Sunday. That's coming up here right after this.
Three, two, one.
Y'all ready for this?
The opening tip.
And here we go.
All right, opening tip time here. We have the Super Bowl matchup set up here. So it took a bit of a U-turn from where we thought we were going at the start of Championship Sunday. As you do in the past few weeks on the podcast here, let's go chronologically through the round, recap what we saw. We'll start the AFC, the Chiefs, and the Ravens. The Chiefs started to reach that New England level in the playoffs of brilliance. It seems like everyone wilts when they see Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes show up. Kansas City wins 17-10. They get the Super Bowl for the fourth time in 5 years. But if you're a Ravens fan, you have to be sick to your stomach about what you watched on Sunday. The game plan from John Harbaugh's staff was outrageously bad. The defense starts out in a soft zone, which is perfect for Patrick Mahomes. It's just sit back and pick that apart by finding open holes in the secondary. Chiefs receivers are not very good, yet letting them all get free releases and just sit down and find open yards. Not good. Not a good look. Ravens also had no answer to Travis Kelce early. He catches 11 passes for 116 yards in the first touchdown of the game in the first quarter. They adjusted him in the second half. It really slowed the Chiefs down at that point, but the offense also had some major issues. The thing that really confused me when I was watching this game here, Baltimore decided to give the running back just 6 carries. We got the Buffalo gas the Kansas City run defense for 182 yards. That is mind-bogglingly bad. When you factor in the weather conditions, well, this was raining all day in Baltimore. It was misty. It was not like ideal throwing conditions. It makes it even worse. It felt like the Ravens were trying to have Lamar Jackson be the hero and carry the Super Bowl instead of just playing the team in front of them. Baltimore made plenty of mistakes. Number of dumb personal foul calls. Lamar Jackson throws a pick and a triple cover in the end zone. Zay Flowers fumbles at the 1 yard line, gives the Chiefs the ball back when he's about to go in for a score. The referees made some questionable calls in favor of the Chiefs, which that's happening now, folks. They are now the New England Patriots, where they are the league's favorite children. They'll get every call if it's close. But when you hold the Chiefs to 17 points, you have to win the football game. Case closed. Other game, NFC side, Lions 49ers. For a solid minute here, this looked like the Lions were actually going to go to the Super Bowl. Detroit comes out on fire on the ground. They are running all over the 49ers. They pick off Brock Purdy early. They go up 24-7 at halftime with Dan Campbell kicks a field goal from the three, making a three-score game. Everything flipped the second half, though, when Dan Campbell decides to go for it on 4th-and-2 from the San Francisco 28. At that point, 24-10 because the 49ers kicked a field goal in their first drive. A field goal from that range, about 45 yards, which you should logically attempt it because if you make it, puts you up 3 scores again on the road in the NFC Championship game. He goes, Josh Reynolds drops a pass. The 49ers get the momentum from that and never look back. The next drive, a pick bounces off the helmet of a Detroit defender. Brandon Ayuk turns to a 51-yard catch. He scores a touchdown 2 plays later, 24-17. Next snap for Detroit, Jameer Gibbs fumbles, 49ers recover. Touchdown shortly after that tie game. 49ers get the lead of the field goal. Dan Campbell ends up in almost the exact same situation he was in the third quarter. He faced a 4th-and-3 the San Francisco 30. Your try, 47-yard field goal here. You could tie the game, have a chance at it. You do that, you slow them into the 49ers. But they go for it again. Jared Goff can't complete the pass to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Next thing you know, 49ers have another touchdown. They're up 10 points. Campbell found yet another way to screw up this game when the Lions are trying to rally and come back. They had 2 minutes to go. They're facing third and goal from the 1 yard line. He called a run play that was stuffed. It forced him to burn a timeout. Detroit ended up getting a touchdown on the next play. But the problem with that was they could not kick it deep and play the timeout games. They only had 2 timeouts instead of 3. It forced them to try and recover the onside kick. They don't. Game it over at that point. The game itself has ignited a firestorm on social media because the analytics geeks were claiming that Dan Campbell did the right thing. He's gone for all year. The math says you support the correct decision, and going for it's the right thing. These are the same guys who in baseball will drive me crazy because they'll tell you you have to take the pitcher out. He's allowed 1 run in 5 innings, struck out 10 guys because you can't let him face the top of the order for a third time. Alex are great. There needs to be common sense here too. Going 4-4-2 at your opponent's 28 in week 7 in Chicago, it's far different than doing it up 2 scores in the NFC Championship game in the second half. Putting up points is always a good thing. Putting up points is very important there because you keep the pressure on San Francisco and force them to score on more possessions. There's also the fact that momentum completely swung on that play. This was an avalanche after that play happened. Something the spreadsheets do not account for. This reminds me of the fiasco week 17 against Dallas when the refs blew that call off the line, the 2-point play called. Instead of taking his loss, kicking the PATs into overtime, Dan Campbell just went for it again and again, missed both chances, and actually lost the football game because he stuck to his guns. Is there value analytics? Yes, I'm not ignorant of that. There are more reasons to go for it than not, but you have to be aware of the situation. The people out there who are going, well, Dan Campbell can't break the receivers, going to drop the football, or the kick would have been made, or 49ers would have scored anyway. Watch the football game happening in front of you. Get out of fantasy land. Get off of Madden. We play football with real people on football fields, not on spreadsheets. We'll get more into the Chiefs 49ers matchup here in just a second. I'm going to be joined by Russell Baxter of Pro Football Guru right after this call from the NFC Championship game, courtesy of Fox Sports' Kevin Burkhart and Greg Olson.
Gardner Johnson in for Joseph, who leaves. Here's Purdy with a lot of time. Steps into one. Launching deep. Going for Brandon Ayuk. It is. Oh, he caught it off the ricochet. Penalty. Is he in? He's down to the 5. We'll see what the penalty is. What a play from Ayuk. We'll see if it stands.
I'll tell you what. This is the best play they've made all day. And, oh, man, Kendall Vindori had one. It hit him right in the face mask. And then, man, give credit there to Brandon Ayuk just staying with the play and catching it off the deflection.
There is no foul on the play. The catch was made, and the runner's down with the contact at the 4.5-yard line. First down, San Francisco.
All right, we are back here. We are through Championship Sunday in the NFL. Super Bowl matchup is set at the Chiefs taking on the 49ers in 2 weeks. Join me today to get recap what we saw on Sunday, guys, ready for the big game. Russell Baxter, great friend of the podcast, Pro Football Guru himself is here. Russell, how are you?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Doing good here. And obviously, we got two very interesting games on Sunday. What was your general takeaways from what we saw on Championship Sunday?
Well, I think it went under the radar when it came to the Ravens and the Chiefs, that these were the two teams that gave up the fewest and the second fewest points in the league this season. So a 17-10 shouldn't have been a major shock. I thought Kansas City let the Ravens hang around, and I thought it was going to come back and bite them in the end zone, which it didn't. But, turnovers decided it. You can, and also some really surprising loss of poise by the Ravens on numerous occasions. And, penalties are always subjective, but quite a few personal fouls. And maybe just a sign of frustration and so on. But I don't think Kansas City's defense gets its due because they've really been so steady this year. I mean, the offense has been a little up and down, and even Travis Kelce didn't put up the usual big numbers, even though I don't think he played every game this year. I think he sat out the last game of the year, but him and Mahomes are money in the postseason. I think Patrick's up to 39 touchdown passes. and only 8 turnovers in 17 playoff games. No, that's not right. Try to remember the number of playoff games you get. Anyway, they take care of the football. And it's funny because Patrick Mahomes has had a couple of 2 interception games in Super Bowls, which he had against when they beat the 49ers, and then the horrible game against the Buccaneers. So I wasn't super surprised, because that champions until the throne thing is very, very real. And they put it together when they had to, and it's not the best edition of the Chiefs. But then again, the last time the Patriots won that Super Bowl in 2018, that wasn't necessarily, you can make a case that was the weakest of their 6 Super Bowl championship teams. As for the other team game, I'm watching Detroit run through the 3rd-ranked run defense in the league like melted butter. And maybe Dan Campbell got a little too cute. Some questionable decisions. Taking points on the road is never a bad thing. He did it early in the game when it was 24-7. But when you play deep, it was funny. The final 4 this year, Mike, points allowed. Baltimore 1, Kansas City 2, San Francisco 3, Detroit 23rd. And listen, we saw that in the playoffs. I mean, Detroit had a great run and so on, but gave up 23 to the Rams. They gave up 23 to the Bucs and 34 to. So defensively, even though they started out the season very well, their pass defense really came back and hurt them in a big way.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go into the AFC game a little bit here, because obviously you said here you felt like this might not be the strongest Chiefs team we've seen here. And the offense itself really seems like at the middle of the season, sort of narrowed in. Okay, we only have 3 really guys we can trust here, which is Kelce, who you mentioned here, Rashee Rice, and Isaiah Pacheco here. So how do you feel like the Chiefs have managed to be so efficient with just really only 3 weapons Mahomes really trusts in these big spots?
Yeah, well, listen, and their offensive line has been a little shaky, but again, it's a different kind of team for them. I think it would surprise people. Remember, Kansas City led the league in scoring last year. This year, they scored 125 fewer points than they did last year during the regular season. They also lost twice as many games as they did. They also were not a great home team. I mean, listen, we're not that far removed from watching them really lay an egg against the Raiders at home on Christmas. And, again, their defense it came up pretty big here in the postseason. And, I think, excuses got made in terms of the Buffalo and Miami wins and so on. But this team moved the ball when they had to. This team got the stops when they had to. And, it's been a postseason where the winning teams have really done a good job taking care of the football. In fact, the 12 winning teams, Mike, have combined for 3 turnovers in 12 wins. And 2 of them are by the Chiefs. Clyde Edwards-Helaire and McKinnon losing fumbles. But Mahomes has not thrown an interception. So we saw Purdy throw an interception. That's it. Purdy threw an interception in the win yesterday. So the Chiefs and Mahomes, again, they really, it's not like they had an offensive explosion in any one of these games, okay? I mean, listen, they scored 38 points in the Super Bowl last year, but last year they gave up 35 points in this year. Remember, and their postseason last year was totally different than this postseason. They scored points, but Jacksonville hung around with them. Cincinnati hung around with them. They won their 3 playoff games last year by 7, 3, and 3 points. But they gave up plenty of yards and they gave up plenty of touchdowns. And it's a different kind of team. It's a different kind of team for an Andy Reid team, if you really think about it. So, it'll be interesting that, these teams played each other in the Super Bowl 4 years ago. Obviously, there's been some big-time changes for both clubs. Tyreek Hill's not around from that game. He had a monster game in that Super Bowl. Jimmy Garoppolo is not the quarterback anymore. So this is going to be a pretty fascinating matchup. And I have to go back and do my numbers. I think Patrick Mahomes loves playing in that stadium in Las Vegas.
Yeah, the Chiefs are 4-0 in that stadium already, so that's definitely something to watch here, too. And you mentioned the Chiefs defense here. Obviously, you think going into the playoffs, two of the highest quarterbacks in the league were Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. The Chiefs really shut them down, especially the second half of the of the Bills game. And the Ravens game really didn't do much offensively the whole game here. So I was great to give Steve Spagnuolo that defense for sort of carrying the Chiefs at this point.
Well, I don't know if they're necessarily carrying. I think it's very, very complimentary football. I think there were times, there have been times during this run that the Chiefs offense has carried the defense. Now I think it's more of a case of, complimentary football. I mean, listen, you go back to the first year when Mahomes won the MVP and they lost in overtime to New England in the title game at home. Now, that defense was horrific. They scored, there were two games where they scored. Let's see. They lost they scored 40 points at Foxborough to the Patriots and lost. Okay. And then they lost the overtime game as well. So, I mean, they had no problem putting points on the board against New England, who won the Super Bowl that year 13-3. And yet at the same time, they couldn't win those games. And then they brought in Spagnuolo. And it's been a different since. And you know, Spagnuolo's early days with the Chiefs, they got off to a rough start. I think they were 6-4, and their defense had not found its sea legs yet. And then they went on a big run at the end of 2019. That kind of carried over, but it's had its ups and downs and its lulls. And now, you know, after last year's draft and so on, and this year, it's a younger defense. It's a faster defense. They're very, very good at cornerback. They're just not super reliant on the pass rush. They have guys who can actually cover. Again, the Ravens led the league in sacks. Guess who was second? The Chiefs. So I think when you have a high profile quarterback and high profile coach, and to a degree a high profile tight end that they have, that trifecta, the defense kind of gets lost. And Steve Spagnuolo is fascinating. We have seen him involved in other teams winning Super Bowls. And what's bizarre about that, Mike, is I will always remember him being the interim head coach for the Saints. Remember when Sean Payton was suspended?
Yep.
Okay. Steve Spagnuolo, whose defense has been magnificent, and the last time I checked, which it hasn't been a while ago, I think those Saints team owned the record, the NFL record for the most yards allowed in a single season in NFL history under Steve Spagnuolo. So talk about highs and lows.
Yeah, that's for sure here. Speaking of a low here, the Baltimore Ravens, who look at the most complete team in the league all season, really laid an egg in this game here. Like, I think it was the biggest flaw in the Baltimore game plan yesterday, because for me, I feel like rushing just six times with your running backs in a game after the Chiefs gave 182 yards on the ground to Buffalo, I think that was a big mistake.
Well, yeah, I mean, listen, their running game, the Kansas City's running game this year, isn't, you know, if you look at the rankings, it's in the middle of the pack, okay? But on the other hand, and their run defense was kind of middle of the pack. I was kind of surprised Baltimore didn't test them a little more running the ball, even though Baltimore's run defense was kind of middle of the pack. And, you know, that's what you see now in this league. There's such a preoccupation, and I know there's more passing, Mike, but there's such a preoccupation now with getting after the quarterback, rushing the passer, and we see these big, huge, I mean, Baltimore had 60 sacks. Last year, the Eagles had 70 sacks. But last year's Eagles team that had 70 sacks was tied for 16th in the league against the run. What did the Chiefs do in the second half of that Super Bowl? They ran the ball. Kind of hard to sack the quarterback when the running back has the ball. So these defenses that we see, these are, for lack of a better word, Mike, these are incomplete defenses. Because if you can't stop the run, eventually you can't stop anything.
Yeah, that's true here. Let's get to the other game here, Detroit-San Francisco here. Obviously, Detroit posts a big lead. A big discussion point now is Dan Campbell's fourth down decision-making. Obviously, the whole momentum of the game flips after they fail to convert the fourth and two and leave 3 points on the field. The game basically snowballs at that point here. He goes for it, fourth down. two separate times, doesn't get it. He has the bizarre running play on the third down and goal when they were trying to start timeouts here. But the fourth down decision making here, we've seen a lot of discussion on the internet about, oh, this is Dan Campbell's way. The analytics say he made the right decision to go forward here. What do you think about what Dan Campbell did yesterday with some of these calls?
I think he was in control of the game. And I thought, I think many people, including myself, were waiting to see if he was going to go for it, late in the first half, and they wound up kicking the field goal, and they're up 17. They're up three scores. But he kind of abandoned that later. I think he overthought it. It kind of reminded me of the Dallas game a little, with it going for the win anyway. And I get aggressiveness. But maybe some of that is also not having faith in his defense. And understandably so. So, you go back and look, and eventually San Francisco was able to get back in that game because they were able to run the football. So we shall see this Super Bowl how the run defenses perform. But I think, listen, the Lions came a long way in a short time, and the last time they had won a road playoff game was in 1957 at San Francisco. And irony of ironies, now it's 12 losses in a row on the road in the postseason. But we have seen in the postseason the last 10, 15 years some very bizarre decisions sometimes, maybe overthinking it. I don't have to remind you Marshawn Lynch and the Seahawks against the Patriots, not so long ago. Or maybe too long ago, if you're Pete Carroll. But maybe there was a bit of trepidation on Dan Campbell's part, knowing that his defensive unit hasn't been up, especially the pass defense. And maybe he was just trying to keep that ball as much as possible. And sometimes I think you gotta be careful with. You're almost toying with the emotions of the other team, if that makes sense. Okay, and you got to play the field position game as well.
Yeah, that's true here. And let's go to the 49ers side here. Obviously, the offense led the comeback here in this game here. Brock Purdy has been very successful in that system. We have Deebo Samuel, Christian McCaffrey, who are two game-breaking players here. Who do you feel like is the most important element to that 49er offense right now?
Well, listen, their offense, they're so balanced. Christian McCaffrey, broke off that long run. And even when they had him somewhat shackled up early in the game and so on, eventually his patience, he's such a versatile weapon. Obviously, Samuel is I don't want to say he's a running back playing wide receiver, but he is he's a Swiss Army knife. There's so many things that he can do. And they didn't even get like a big night from George Kittle either. I don't think he caught a pass maybe until like the second half. So, but I also want to give Brock Purdy his due as well, because, a lot of criticism, the way he played against Green Bay, but when push came to shove, he drove them down the field and got the job done. And now here they are down by 17. And he helps them get the job done. So I think Kyle Shanahan knows what he has with Brock Purdy. He has a relatively inexperienced quarterback is what he has. But, hey, we've seen some quarterbacks win Super Bowls in their second year in the league. We saw that with Russell Wilson. We saw that with Ben Roethlisberger. We saw that with Tom Brady. So, This is going to be a very interesting matchup again, and it should be a high scoring game. That fast track at Las Vegas, where, like I said, the Chiefs. I'll be doing the numbers later in the week. I know Patrick Mahomes, and I know the Raiders are not the 49ers, I can't explain why certain teams do well in certain buildings. Ask the Green Bay Packers how they feel about playing at AT&T Stadium. They're 6-0 there. Including a Super Bowl win over the Steelers.
Yeah, that's true here. And speaking of the Super Bowl, we have this coming up here. What are some early storylines that have your attention in this game?
Well, anything but, you know, hopefully it'll be a football story. You know, it, listen, four Super Bowl appearances in 5 years. You know, now we're talking in a different way. You know, the Bills obviously went to four Super Bowls in 4 years, although with no success. I think one of the storylines that I'm going to be looking at is, you know, Kyle Shanahan, this was, you know, four NFC title game appearances in 5 years. He still, I think in some people's mind, has that stigma of being behind or being part of two very big Super Bowl losses, offensive coordinator of the Falcons, you know, with the Patriots comeback. And, of course, when these teams played last time, in the Super Bowl in South Florida, they're up 20-10 and give up the final 21 points of the game. So closing the deal, I think that's definitely a storyline. I think that's going to be a question he gets asked an awful lot. And I think, I'm guessing, that some people will contemplate if the Chiefs win, what is the future of Andy Reid? And I'm not saying, and that would be his decision, obviously. But, you know, if you always say it's going to get asked. Let's put it that way. Super Bowl media day, everything gets asked. You know, what does the future hold for Andy Reid? Obviously, he's got the second most wins in postseason history, top five in terms of total wins. He's resurrected himself here. You know, the Chiefs have been in the playoffs 9 years in a row, which is tied for the second longest streak ever. You know, three Super Bowl titles as a head coach, which is pretty rare company as well. So I'm not making any predictions on that regard. I think Andy Reid's obviously good for football, but these are some of the things that, you know, everybody's got 2 weeks to talk about and think about.
Yeah, for sure here. And obviously this is the closest we've had to a rematch in a Super Bowl in a while here, because obviously we had these teams play 4 years ago. Most of the key guys are still in the same positions, obviously. Change of quarterback of the 49ers, Tyreek Hill not here, as you mentioned here. And you could take from that previous Super Bowl game that you want to think we can watch for this year.
I don't know if there's anything we can take from there, but of course, these teams played, correct me if I'm wrong, they played a year ago in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And then the Chiefs walloped them last year in San Francisco. So I think you can maybe take a little something from that. You know, and so obviously this is going to be the third meeting between these coaches in 5 years. So I think you can certainly take something from the coaching aspect of it. Personnel has certainly changed, but game plan wise, it'll be interesting to see how this goes down and so on. But again, these you know, it's the Chiefs remind me of, and it's going to be a weird comparison, but I think you'll understand. The Denver Broncos scored the most points in one season in NFL history in 2013 and lost the Super Bowl by 35 points. 2 years later, they reinvented themselves as a defensive team, and Peyton Manning was literally on his last legs, and they won the Super Bowl. And so now do we see a defensive version of the Chiefs win the Super Bowl opposed to the offensive version of the Chiefs that we have seen? So I find that the evolving and the changing of this team. And you know, the Patriots were famous for that. You know, the Patriots won three Super Bowls in 4 years and were mostly a defensive and special teams team. And then Tom Brady got more familiar with the offense, and they opened up the playbook for him and took his lumps against the Giants a couple of times. But, you know, the big comeback against Atlanta, in the Super Bowl, the you know, obviously the comeback against the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, they scored 33 points against the Eagles and lost the Super Bowl. So watching some of these coaches and watching them and their teams and their philosophies evolve to me is very, very fascinating in a league that is supposedly an offensive. This is supposedly an offensive league, and yet the top three teams in terms of points allowed made it to the Final Four.
Yeah, that's for sure. A couple of quick ones to wrap up here. keys to victory here. I'll start with the Chiefs. How do you think, what do you think the Chiefs have to do to win this game?
Well, I think they have to control the ball. And they have to prevent. Listen, they're going to go back and look at what the Lions, and the Lions, you know, Lions to me are the top five offensive line in this league. And they made the 49ers look bad. Okay? I mean, they gave up about 90 yards per game on the ground this season. And the Lions had well over that in the first half alone. And we have seen Kansas City, again, their running numbers during the regular season overall don't suggest that this is over. But again, I can also go back to the second half of the Super Bowl last year. I think this is going to be a ball control game, okay? But that doesn't mean it doesn't open up things for big plays. We might see an awful lot of play action passing in this game. I mean, you got Christian McCaffrey, who wasn't around when these teams played in the Super Bowl the first time. You know, he's still a member of the Carolina Panthers. That trade had not been made yet. So that's definitely a different factor here. I'm also going to be watching, and I throw this out every year when it's applicable. What do you think, Mike? Could we finally see a tight end win Super Bowl MVP honors? It's never happened.
Well, you got two very good ones in this game.
Yes, and you had the same matchup before, obviously, with Kittle and Kelsey in the other Super Bowl. I keep waiting for it to happen. Obviously, the quarterbacks keep on taking center stage when it comes to winning MVP honors and so on for the most part. But that's something I'll be watching, especially with the kind of postseason that Travis Kelce has. As we know, he's the all-time leader in terms of postseason receptions. Still got a ways to go with the yards, but he's creeping up on Jerry Rice with those postseason touchdowns as well.
Yeah, for sure. Let's go to the other side here. 49ers keys to victory. Obviously, I feel like the key for them is, like, they will have certain athletic mismatches against the Chiefs defense, especially with McCaffrey and Debo. So, like, what do you think they need to do to exploit those weaknesses here and find a way to get themselves over the hump and get revenge for Super Bowl 54?
Well, I think they have to be patient. I think they have to listen. They struggled at times to move the ball against Detroit and made a lot of adjustments, obviously. I mean, they had 7 points at the half. And, you know, I know they had the one turnover and so on, but they couldn't get Christian McCaffrey untracked for the most part in that first half. So I think that Kyle Shanahan is going to have to, again, be patient. You can burn the Chiefs on the, as good as their defense has been. And again, we already talked about these imperfect defenses, but if I'm Kyle Shanahan, Mike, I go back and look at the Sunday night game the Chiefs played at Lambeau Field against the Packers. Green Bay was so perfectly balanced in that game. And obviously that's Matt LaFleur too, who Mike Shanahan knows something about. If you remember that game now, you know, Kansas City made a run in the second half and damn near pulled it out and so on. But, you know, that Green Bay running game had a big night against the Chiefs. And we saw the Bills have success against the Chiefs on the ground as well. So they can be had. This is not the purple people eaters or the steel curtain. Okay. But they have to avoid the mistakes. And that was, you know, mistakes in the Super Bowl in the first time in these teams. So even though Patrick Mahomes made some mistakes as well. So, but the Chiefs have done a good job of making timely plays on both sides of the ball. I don't know how you can necessarily prevent that, but I think if you can keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hands as much as possible, that's certainly a good start.
All right, my last question here is obviously this is sort of a traditional question here when I talk to you about this game here. You always are good at finding this X-factor player or thing that, like, nobody's talking about. You feel like could be a key to this game. Who do you think is the X-factor in Super Bowl 58?
Oh, the X-factor. Well, Chris Jones, I mean, it's hard. You know, you're talking about all pro. You've got quite a few all pro players in this game, and so I don't know if you consider a star player can be an X factor, but with so much attention on Travis Kelce, and understandably so. You know, the Chiefs have a pretty good other tight end in Noah Gray. And I'm not saying he'd be Super Bowl MVP, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the Chiefs maybe run some two tight end sets, keep the Niners defense off balance. And again, the Niners defense played great in the second half. But I'm going to just throw out, we'll call it Gray's Anatomy. How's that? Noah Gray's Anatomy.
All right, so keep an eye on Noah Gray. You see if he sneakily comes involved in this game. Russell, thanks for all the time. I really appreciate it. People want to follow on social media, keep with all your NFL coverage. How can they do that?
Backs Football Guru on Twitter. You can find Pro Football Guru on Instagram and Facebook. And I have a neat little project I got going on Facebook called Football Past and Present, Seriously. We do football of all kinds and do a lot of emphasis on history. And thanks for having me on, Mike.
Thanks again for taking the time to talk to me. Enjoy the game.
Oh, I shall.
The 2-minute drill.
All right, 2-minute drill time here. First Grand Slam of the season, the books on the tennis calendar. Show did not go the way we were expecting it here. Women's side, we did get a repeat champion. Aryna Sabalenka defended her title without dropping a set, which is highly impressive. She also got some revenge on Coco Gauff by beating her in the semifinals. She returned the favor after Gauff beat her at the U.S. Open final. She did it without dropping a set, by the way, which is extremely hard to do. So great job at Sabalenka there. Naomi Osaka, also a very brief return to Grand Slam tennis. She loses the first round here. The real shocks of this thing, though, came on the men's side. The first time since 2018, Novak Djokovic did not win an Australian Open he was allowed to compete in. And remember that in 2022, I want to say, he got booted for the vaccine stuff. Djokovic loses in the semifinals to Italian Jannik Sinner, who went on to defeat Daniil Medvedev in the final to claim his first career Grand Slam. Sinner is just 22 years old. He shows some major shots when down under. He basically blew Djokovic out in four sets, which is impressive considering this is Djokovic's favorite tournament. Rafa made a two-set deficit to beat Medvedev in the final. He's the highest-ranked Italian player ever. He's now the second young gun with a slam in the past three slams after Carlos Alcaraz won at Wimbledon. It's the first time since 2005 that one of the big three did not make the final on the men's side. First time since 2014, one of them did not win. We've been waiting a long time to see the next generation of male players that could take over. Looks like we might have them here. Roger Federer has retired. Rafael Nadal did not play in Australia. He's basically taking a farewell tour here. He's on his way out. Novak Djokovic is turning 37 in May. While he's fit enough to continue for another couple of years, is he going to be able to maintain the level to beat these young guns or enter their physical primes? We will see. So the interesting start of the season. We're going to be live for some big shift in men's tennis going forward. We'll keep an eye on everything behind the scenes. They take a little break on some swings across Asia and across the U.S. before they get to the French Open in May. With that, I want to end the podcast. So we want to thank my guest, Russell Baxter, coming on here, recapping all the football we saw, help us get ready for the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. I also want to say, if you like good stuff like this podcast, leave my off-season plan for the Jets. I laid out what they should do on the podcast, on the blog, or this week. Check it out, justinthesuffering.wordpress.com. We have the Sky Guys podcast this week. We are drafted characters who are likely to appear in the Mandalorian movie that came out last week. Coming up this week on Wednesday, you're going to have the discussion of what's going on with this Rey movie. So a lot of rumors coming out. We talk about that in the Sky Guys. That's going to be in your podcast platforms over there. Subscribe to the Sky Guys. Same podcast platforms at the top of the show. You can also follow me on social media, mphilips331. It's M-P-H-I-L-I-P-S 331. That's going to do it for us here on the podcast. Kind of next week, we're going to continue our Super Bowl coverage here. We're going to do our Super Bowl betting special, and we'll be joined by Martino Puccio to do all that. We'll do our picks for the big game and more. So we got a better week than Lions fans.
This has been the Just End the Suffering Podcast.
I'm out.